Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. It's late in the evening in the broadcast bunker, and of course, the planes are landing overhead, so you might hear them if you have headphones on. You might not, but I'll do everything I can to get them out, but you can hear the planes landing, and this time of night, usually it kicks up. So in this podcast, something I've wanted to talk about for a while, and I will probably have to hose down again and again, and this is this question that I would just simply entitle The Road to Character or Just Characters, a Political Process Without Principles, which is what we seem to have these days in the United States. We're going to talk about it in podcast 705. All right, developers, I want you to listen up. If you are developing websites for clients that do e-commerce or clients that need payment processing, I want you to listen up because I'm working with this new company called ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. They are a payment processor, and they're great when, you know, if you're looking for a payment processor to work with or to suggest to your clients if you're putting together the website and integrating payment processing into the website. That is what ReliaFund does. So here's what I want you to do. Click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com for ReliaFund. They have been payment processing, or they are a payment processor that's been doing this, providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. Now, when I talk about that, I have been hanging out with these guys and talking to them. They are really working with clients to develop apps and to get things done quickly and to make sure that their clients are served well. There's no long-term contracts. They have great rates. They're secure and technology-focused, and they want to work with you if you're a developer and you're working with clients to develop their websites. Give them a call, because if you're a developer, you're probably going to be pleased to know that you'll talk to actual human beings. Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry at ReliaFund, 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040, or check them out at ReliaFund.com. Click on that banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. And of course, if you're a small business person and you're looking to develop a site where payment processing is going to be integrated into it, you know, I'd encourage you as well to just go ahead and call ReliaFund, because Kevin and Greg can work with your developer to get it done, and it'll be pretty slick. So that's ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Google Play, right off the page at TheBobDavisPodcast.com. We have streaming. I was over at somebody's house just recently in you know, they brought up Chrome, and Chrome actually opens a separate window and plays the podcast as soon as you hit the page, which is actually really cool. And I, you know, I really appreciate people doing that. You can also subscribe to the RSS feed right off the page of the Bob Davis Podcast, or through iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, and so forth. Appreciate the likes and shares and favoriting on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Twitter's a cesspool, but what the hell. my favorite is Instagram, because we don't snark on Instagram. Also appreciate your donations for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. So this podcast is really, it's been built on a lot of conversations this weekend. So this is a Sunday night in podcast time. I could have done this podcast on Thursday night, on Friday night, on Saturday, and I have had a number of exhausting conversations with people important to me in the last few days, trying to figure out how to talk about this, because there's been some things that have alarmed me from the news and things that I've been reading, in particular a single book that I've been reading, and I want to talk about them in this podcast, because for me it illustrates part and parcel what our problem is and what our problem may be going forward. So I'm going to pull my chair up a little bit. First of all, the president is talking to Republican House members recently on the gun control issue in the wake of the Parkland, Florida shooting, and he said, get the guns first, we'll deal with due process later. And the Republicans had to come out and apologize and basically say that he misspoke and, you know, just kind of displace because of the shock that people who are quote-unquote liberty-minded had regarding that comment by the president. Second, the president announced tariffs for steel and aluminum. Now, they haven't been enacted, but he says he will, and that there will be no exceptions. And when he did this, he later tweeted from Mar-a-Lago something to the effect of trade wars are winnable and, hilarity ensued. Third, recently the president said he would support a 25-cent per gallon federal tax increase. He told Democrat leaders in the House and Senate that he would support this federal gas tax increase on gas and diesel fuel in order to provide funding for his quote-unquote infrastructure plan, which supposedly business is supposed to provide the funding for. So this is what I'm struggling with. This is the news landscape that I'm struggling with for many reasons, because of the hypocrisy and the out and out slap in the face by President Trump to the people that voted for him, by the way, of which I was not one of. And there's a lot of reasons why this is difficult, because how do I talk about politics without wading into the cesspool that it is these days, upsetting people and, you know, getting people automatically to throw up the hackles in defense and say, now, just a second, don't do that, because I'm trying to make a point here that I think is important. How do I assemble all these things coming at me fast and furious in my mind into a podcast that gives the listeners something to think about without turning off, tells a story, and leaves you with a little bit more information than you might have had when we started, and really genuinely moves the story forward? That's kind of what moving the story forward means. So I'm going to start with what set me off in the first place down this path to this podcast 705. Friends, first of all, I don't give Christmas gifts, and I don't expect to get Christmas gifts. And every year, certain people in my life take pity on me and give me Christmas gifts, and I always feel terrible because I don't get anyone else anything. And someone gave me the David Brooks book, Road to Character, for Christmas. And I had just finished Charles McKay's Extraordinary Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, and I thought, well, you know, what the hell? I've got this book, and I don't. Oh, actually, I read a book about the Normandy invasion, and then I finished that really fast, and I thought, well, I got this, so I'm just going to read this book by David Brooks, who is always regarded as a conservative columnist. He's the quote-unquote conservative columnist for the New York Times, which isn't saying much, but he is always held up as a conservative and as a conservative thinker. Usually current event books, pop psychology books, pop sociology books end up on my shelf for years. They are never disturbed. They just sit there. And if they survive long enough and I have nothing else to read, I will read them. The Road to Character, this is the new David Brooks book, is being read now without having to do its time on the shelf. It purports to explain or demonstrate in some way, shape, or form the problems with our society and what character is, and that the problem is we don't have enough character. And this is done with a foreword that describes two parts of the human experience, the part that is in the world, the part that wants to accomplish something, and the part that rises to a higher calling. And then this is paid off through a series of stories about people. And that's really all I'm going to say about the book, because what bothers me, really, it isn't even the information in the book. What bothers me is the sanctimonious tone that some people on the conservative side tend to take. And this is the idea that there's something wrong with our culture because of social media and handheld devices and a focus on self and the celebration of football players and the end zone, as opposed to the sacrifice for the greater good or an overall purpose. And if we could just become more purposeful and sacrifice more and become passionate about that purpose and devote our lives to something bigger than ourselves, then we'd be better, and so the country would be saved. Well, I think that's tripe, and I think that whenever you hear people, especially quote-unquote conservatives, talking about sacrifice for the greater good, it drives me crazy. Because if you've read your Hayek, then you know that this was the call of communists and socialists and collectivists always, is to sacrifice for the greater good. That is not an American concept. I celebrate the NFL players who celebrate in the end zone. And it also is ageist in the sense that it kind of takes a dim view of a younger generation of Americans who tend to spend more time on their handheld devices and social media, and that somehow this is the end of the West. By the way, well, I'll get to that in a second. And I thought to myself, well, Why is it that, and I started to say this before, but I'll say it again, why is it that it seems like Republicans, so-called conservatives, seem to always have to take this piece of moral high ground so that then they can tell us what we have to do to be good people? It really irritates me because I don't think anybody knows what anybody else should be doing to be a better person. And I wouldn't presume to tell you what your character is like or not. I know that if you lie to me, I'm not going to deal with you. I know that if you don't pay your bill, I'm not going to deal with you. I know that if I don't do what I say I'm going to do, and if I don't have integrity, then you're not going to deal with me, and so forth. These, to me, are basic things. But when it comes to higher character as being judged as not a person who's distracted by their device and so forth, how would they know? And of course, the exemplar is always the World War II generation, those people who grew up in the 20s and 30s and fought World War II and raised the baby boomers, the world's most selfish generation, and managed the peace and prosperity of the post-war world. If we could just be like the greatest generation, and the authors always say, not me, really not me, but everyone else, if they could just be like the greatest generation, but especially the young people today, if they could be more like their grandparents, somehow the world would be the better place. And of course, it's always the millennials and always Generation Z that is distracted on on all sorts of drugs for ADHD, on social media, that they're liberal and blah, blah, blah. This is the same generation, by the way, that has produced conservative thinkers, that has produced Medal of Honor winners. The same generation that is currently running, they are the pages and the staff members and the young staffers in every part of our government, including the White House, the Republican White House, and the Republican House and Senate. This is the young generation that defended the country after 9/11, that everyone talks about when they come home and we have to stand up for the veterans, and that's fine. But nobody says, oh, by the way, they're millennials. We don't want it because they're distracted and they're on their cell phones, right? It's so irritating, and it really sets me off. And that's really all I need to say about David Brooks's piece of tripe that is nothing but pop philosophy and sociology musings. I wouldn't recommend it, and it will end up being garage sale fodder within a year if you go out and spend $19 or whatever on it. But that gets us started. Well, when you hear this podcast, you'll probably be in the middle of another one of those spring snowstorms that we seem to have a lot of in March. And sometimes the cooling and the heating really overwhelms your furnace and your water heater and all of your pipes and things of that nature. So I always recommend Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because when it comes to keeping all these systems operating, especially in business, actually, you got to have someone who can provide reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Here's the number you call, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in St. Paul's Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. It's always a good idea in the summer to have them come out and check the heat. And I got to tell you, if they'd have done it for me, I think we might have been able to avoid a period of time where the heat was down in this structure, the broadcast bunker. So it's always a good idea. And Ryan customers get first dibs on service. So call them. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. Also, Journeyman Plumbers, they got so much business at Ryan, they need your help. So if you're looking for work, same numbers and ryanplumbing.com. So remember the news stories I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Get the guns, we'll deal with the due process later. 25 cent per gallon gas tax to pay for another infrastructure adventure, frankly, we don't need. And then, of course, the aluminum and steel tariff. A local Senate district Republican website here has a banner on it, on their Facebook page, which reads over the background of the flag of the United States of America, "We are free men and women, citizens and patriots. Many of us are Christians, libertarians, social conservatives, fiscal conservatives, strict constitutionalists, and defenders of natural law." This district is in a part of the state of Minnesota that gave Donald Trump roughly 60% plus of the vote. And so, Second Amendment rights, economic growth, limited government, less spending and taxation are really probably at the top of the lists of issues that these people care about. And I would like to know what principle justifies supporting an elected official who seems to be doing the exact opposite of what these people voted for. You know, and I'm talking about Donald Trump. And I will tell you, in the fall of 2015, I said Donald Trump could win the election. I said it before anyone. It's there on the podcast. If you want to find it, you'll see it. In February of 2016, on a cold and rainy night, in the place where this Senate district holds its conventions, I said to another conservative group, the problem for you and Republicans in general isn't if Trump loses. It is if he wins. And then with that, I left and went to cover the, you know, primaries down in Iowa, the caucuses in Iowa and also South Carolina. What troubles me is not character. What troubles me is the lack of principle in both political parties. And I think it's a different thing. But especially in the Republican Party, this lack of principle, because the Republicans are the majority party and they control all three branches of government right now. So principle is extremely important. And when we talk about character, character can be many, many things. I'm talking specifically about political principle. What is it that you stand for? How do Republicans reconcile getting the guns and dealing with due process later? If they are strict constitutionalists, how do Republicans reconcile increased tariffs on steel and aluminum if they are for limited government and free trade? How do Republicans reconcile spending billions of dollars on infrastructure and raising hundreds of billions more through increasing taxes on fuel, which, by the way, we all need? So if you're trying to save your tax cut, you're just going to spend it on gas. Especially after you've already planned on spending $1.7 trillion to give people, so they've deficit spent to give people this tax cut, which will be sopped up by a gas tax increase. And the president told Democrats he would support this if they would support his infrastructure plan. So we're in a situation where, you know, principle doesn't appear to be the primary thing, and yet people continue to rhetorically support and react rhetorically to any threat to the president and support him, especially if they're Republicans, no matter what, while he basically kicks them in the ass and slaps them in the face and laughs in their face for the things that they voted for. And the response is to say, well, that's not what he said. Well, it is. Or it's to displace saying people are reacting to rhetoric and that we should wait and see what he does with, you know, trade tariffs. Now, you say, well, maybe we do say, you know, maybe we do need infrastructure. You know, have you been to the airport lately, which doesn't address the issue of should we deficit spend for things like that. And then, of course, the final line of defense is to complain about media bias against the president and so forth and so on. It's all BS. It's all defensive, rhetorical BS. All of it indicates a complete lack of principle among all Republicans from the top down, the president all the way down to the people that voted for him. Up there in Anoka County. It has been pronounced in the Democratic Party for years, this lack of principle. In the Democratic Party, it really became an epidemic when the Clintons famously talked about the ends justifying the means, although it started long before then. But it is now becoming epidemic among Republicans who just want to hold on to power. Now, I don't want to make this about Democrats and Republicans, and I don't want to make this negative because I want to talk about something greater than this. I just use this to illustrate the current problem that we're having. Here's what I see from this perspective. You may not see the same thing, but I think if people pull back and are a little bit more objective, they will see it. I see major institutions, especially politics, failing. I see things failing across the board. I see religion and religious institutions failing. And so in the areas of religion and society, I see people in a free fall. And again, it's got nothing to do with character. It's a greater problem than that. I see it in business and the economy. I see it in communications and creative pursuits like Hollywood, which is, by the way, in the midst of a major slump, and sports, which is in the midst of a major slump because of so many reasons I can't get into it in a single podcast. And I think part of it is that people simply don't understand what is happening and they don't understand how to react to it. They can't react to it. So they come up with these ideas that don't make any sense, but I'll get into that. But especially and most certainly, this lack of principle is pronounced in the failing realm of politics, and it is failing. And I see Republicans contributing to it in a major, major way. Now, for the politically involved, which, by the way, is a minority, these days, the daily information diet consists of one of the cable news channels on the right and perhaps the local talk radio station, or worse, somebody's YouTube channel that's going to tell you that everything is a false flag attack and so forth, and that everything is a reaction to something that someone's doing to them to shut them up and so forth. On the so-called right, I see a mob reacting to every stimuli defensively, and they are in a constant angry crouch. On the so-called left, I see nothing but seething, angry voices seeking to stop those they disagree with from speaking and to eliminate every freedom they don't like from constitutional guarantees. Now, the individuals in these cases aren't like this, but collectively, this is what the mob looks like. Overall, it's a mob. That's what we have in the political realm today. It's a principleless mob without character, to use David Brooks's, terminology. Meanwhile, the government has revised down fourth quarter economic growth to something like 2.4%. The stock market is more volatile, and this week down several hundred points on the most recent news of the more trade protectionist approach by the president, which I've told you about many, many times. And the country is now over $20 trillion in debt. Getting that debt covered demands higher yields on bonds, increased inflation, or taxes, or all three, all of which are taxes on individuals and dangerous economically. Meanwhile, the Republicans in control of all three branches of government in Washington have drastically increased spending to the extent that our budget for one fiscal year is now $4 trillion. They have also increased the surveillance state, so to speak. They have also increased the power of the federal government. And they're banking on economic growth, promised economic growth, because of the tax cut to get us out of the woods. And maybe that will happen, but what if it doesn't? So when you do a tax cut because you're trying to deficit spend to promote consumption, is that a libertarian economic principle? Is that a Republican economic principle? Or is that a Keynesian Democrat principle? So deficit spending for a tax cut is not supply-side economics. That is Keynesian economics. I've pointed that out on many different occasions. What if people save their, quote, tax cut instead and don't spend it? Or what if they end up spending it on fuel? What if companies reinvest their tax cut into buoying up their stock instead of using it on equipment, let's say? Or give it to employees to garner favor with the president, and the employees do what? Save that bonus that they got rather than spend it. See, nobody has brought that up as an issue of principle in all of these things. We don't have an economic principle among Democrats or Republicans right now. We just have a bunch of people in a mob roiling around demanding that people respond to this and that. And this is what I'm getting to. And in the few minutes I have left, I'm going to suggest a different path that actually I don't think that we will be able to take. But there is a path that we should also avoid, and I don't know if that is possible. But if we employ principle, perhaps we can avoid the path that we really don't want to go down. And this one principle that is most important is simply individual freedom. And that is not today's Republican or Democrat Party. I don't find any evidence that either party is interested in really cultivating individual freedom. You know, I've often talked about changes in era. At the end of the Victorian order, back at the end of the 1800s, the order of the world had been dictated for 100 years by the monarchies of Europe. And it began to break down, and the first earthquake in that breakdown was World War I. Well, they didn't learn their lesson from World War I. And in the interwar period, while some of the monarchies were gone, the powers that be still didn't grasp that things had changed. And they still continue to do things in the old ways. And of course, and I don't know that this was the cause, but the thing that happened in the United States, of course, with the stock market crash of 1929 and the disastrous reactions of central banks all over the world that created the conditions for fascism to develop in Italy and in Germany and cause the most significant calamity of the 20th century, really of three centuries, and that is World War II. The so-called Greatest Generation erected a new structure after that war that would ensure good money, and 70 plus years of peace and prosperity to bring it to our current time frame, all based on the principle that democratic governments and freer trade suggest less of an intention to war. Now, all you hear about these days is how that order has to be torn down. If you go on YouTube, if you go read blogs, if you talk to people at these political meetings, all they talk about is the Illuminati and the New World Order, and that's got to come down and everything else. Well, the problem with all of this is no one is suggesting what they have in mind to replace the order that has maintained peace and prosperity for 70 years. So here's the tectonic shift that is happening today in our world. We are in the midst of the beginning, the very early dawn, the blue dawn before the sun comes up and before, you know, one half of the sky is azure and the other half is black. This is just the beginning of the fourth industrial revolution. This is a revolution that has started back in the 1950s with the transistor and the integrated circuit in the 1960s, then the computer in the 70s, the personal computer in the 1980s, the internet in the 1990s, handheld devices and cellular data in the 2000s, and today, IT developments, robotics, artificial intelligence, and more. It's all built on the infrastructure that has come before it, all wired to the internet. The parallel in, the Industrial Revolution was the creation of factories for creating, woven goods in the Pawtucket River Valley in the 1830s, when they started to bring people off the farms to work in mills. So that's where we are today. We're a little bit further down the line, and this industrial revolution will move much faster and have many, many greater effects on society than the previous industrial revolution. Because now we're talking about drones delivering food and robotics and artificial intelligence that will be millions of times smarter than human beings. We're talking about wiring in human beings to, artificial intelligence and so forth. This new world, as I said, is just beginning. Perhaps the first cracks in the death of the old order were 9/11 and terrorism and the increase of nationalism and various sort of brush fire wars across the world. But I will say this. If we aren't careful, the calamity that will befall the world, the next so-called world war, is going to touch all of us. We have to be very careful about how we make this next step. And we can't repeat the mistakes of the Victorian generation and of the so-called interwar period between World War I and World War II. We cannot repeat those mistakes because in the next war, it will not be like you see on TV when you're watching the Hitler Channel. There will be cyber war. There will be electromagnetic pulse attacks. There will be destruction of power and infrastructure through the internet. There will be all sorts of drones and, artificially intelligent creatures. There will be the destruction of infrastructure, terrorism, tribal war and tribalism, biological and chemical warfare, and information warfare on a scale that you and I have never seen. It makes the Russian intervention in the U.S. election of 2016 in terms of propaganda look like child's play. And we do not want this to happen because I don't know that human beings can survive this. I don't know that any order could survive this kind of a calamity. But this is the kind of birth pang that signals the dawn of literally a new age, and nothing of the old is going to remain. So this is why it has to be managed very carefully, because we cannot afford to have it blow up in our face. And what do we have? We have old guys screaming about Muslims. We have anarchists knocking out Starbucks windows. We have leaders who could help us avoid the calamity that can't rise to a greater challenge. All we hear about is tearing down the deep state, getting the Illuminati out of foreign policy. And again, if you think that that's true or you think that that should be done, the answer is not an American Hugo Chavez, which is what we have in office today, which is what Republican populism is, or an American Chamberlain, which is what Democratic populism is. And this is what I mean by principles, and specifically political principles. This isn't about, your principles of, I don't fool around with my wife, or, you know, I always pay cash for goods, or I don't use debt. Those are personal things, and those are entirely up to you. I'm talking about the lack of political principles and how it is literally tearing apart the political process. When a president says something like, I'm going to enact tariffs, or I say we get the guns and leave due process for later, Republicans should resign from the party en masse. It's time for people to stand up and say, we expect principles, and the first principle is individual freedom. So you need to prove yourself to me again, Republicans, that you are for individual freedom. And if you're not, guess what? Steel tariffs is not about individual freedom. All that's going to do is make everything more expensive. You know, trade protectionism, look around you, because everything you see will go away. That is not the solution to our problems. We need to understand the world, and we need to think more about principles that can pull us out of the delusion, apparently, that we are in right now, or we're going to be confronted with a nightmare that none of us want. You know, in these podcasts that I try to keep to 30 minutes, it's really hard to cover all the stuff that I'm thinking about. And I don't want to do one political podcast after another, but I am really, really concerned about the direction Republican politics in this country has taken. You know, I'm certainly not on the left. I know that there are a lot of people concerned on the left about the same sort of lack of principle in the Democrat Party. So this is something that's really across the realm in terms of politics these days. And this is, you know, one of a continued effort to get people to pay attention to actually thinking about what the principles should be. And on the Republican side, on the right, and I don't even know if Republicans are on the right anymore, so I shouldn't say that. But, you know, I think both parties should rededicate themselves to individual freedom, because there are Democrat ideas about individual freedom that sometimes make some sense, particularly in the realm of marijuana and in the realm of you know, surveillance. But one of the big things that for me was a huge flag is this trade protection thing with President Trump. It's in the news. I've been telling you about this for months. You have all this talk about how he has a problem with foreign manufacturing. And if you're a company that uses foreign manufacturing, you've got to start hedging your bets, because he is going to lay it on you if you're in, either through executive order or through getting these idiots to pass trade protection laws. So if you're preparing to bring some of your production back to the U.S. to reshore, then please consider Depot Star, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing, right here in Minnesota. Depot Star, D-E-P-O-T, Depot Star at depotstar.com. Click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. It'll take you to Depot Star. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating to make sure all your systems are up and running. You can call 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. Also, you journeyman plumbers, they need your help. You can check them out at ryanplumbing.com or call those numbers, and they will be glad to talk to you. Just ask for Greg Ryan. Okay, thanks for listening to Podcast 705, the Bob Davis Podcast. Principles, my brother. Principles.